Purple Heart Homes presents Putting the Pieces Back Together, a forum for veterans and the community to connect. Here are your hosts, veterans John Galena and Brad Borders.
Well, hello. Neither John Galena nor Brad Borders are in the studio today, and it's a little odd for me doubly because this is a brand new studio that I'm looking at around me. If you are listening on the terrestrial radio, you cannot see my look of bewilderment as I'm checking this place out for the very first time. WSIC has upgraded their facilities. And if you don't know this voice, this is Devil Dog Devin, and you are listening to Putting the Pieces Back Together. Today, we've got a great host, me, but we've also got a great guest. We've got Kevin Popko from Love Our Veterans. Did I say that right?
You did.
Kevin Popko?
Correct. Yeah, good job, buddy.
Man, that's a cool name.
Yeah, I guess you say so.
Yeah.
I got teased a lot, but I'm over it now. Popcorn, Poopco, all that fun stuff, but you nailed it.
Well, I appreciate that. I'm famous for not saying the guest's name right, and it can get a little awkward sometimes. I think I called one guest like Flamingo like 30 times. anyways, so Kevin, tell us a little about yourself. Where are you from?
Yeah, well, actually, I grew up in Gaithersburg, Maryland. So, you know, if you're not familiar, it's about 20 miles north of D.C. Mm-hmm. Did my thing, did well in high school, scholastically, so-so, athletically, very well. And, you know, it was all friends going off to college after high school, and I kind of goofed around with the community college thing, did a couple years, got a few credits, didn't really have much direction. And my dad's best friends, like, he was a devil dog, diehard, badass Marine. he became a Baltimore City cop, just tough guy. He's like, man, you need to join the Marines. I'm like, yeah, I don't know. And I ended up doing it. So got in, just did the rifleman thing the first couple years. And be honest with you, kind of got bored. I could run like the wind. I was strong back then. And apparently I could shoot very well. So everyone's like, dude, you gotta go scout sniper. I'm like, yeah, I see those guys. They'd run around with the cool black shirts, and they never had to go. And as a fellow devil dog, you know the deal. There would always be those 25-mile humps.
Oh, yeah.
Backpack, yeah. Combat boots, full garb, and change your socks every 5 miles or whatever it was. Those guys never had to do that. They got to go out in the field and do their own thing. And I'd see them running back. We're wearing those ugly green PT shorts and our thing. Uh-huh. They had like cool khaki shorts and the black, you know, sniper shirts. I'm like, I do want to do that.
So in your mind, being a scout sniper was easier?
I wouldn't say easier. It was a lot more fun. I mean, the toughest part, of course, was you had to do two things. Number one, you had to get into what they call stay platoon. So every battalion in the Marine Corps has a state platoon. At least this is back in the 90s. I don't know what they're doing now. And STAY stands for Strategic Target Acquisition. And those were the snipers. And there's only one of them per battalion. And I was at Lejeune, so there was only a handful of battalions there. So it was a privilege to be a part of that outfit. But the hardest thing, because so many people wanted to do it, is getting into the platoon. I'm not even talking sniper school yet. So it was crazy. You had to do 10 miles with the backpack on and do it in less than 3 hours. You had to do a swimming thing, the PFT, all back to back to back to back. It was like a six hour ordeal. And, you know, 20 guys came out, tried out, and they had like 2 slots.
So oh, wow.
Went and did that. I beat everyone in every event except the swimming. That's the one thing I'm not very good at. And those guys, the ones that are already in the platoon and the actual snipers, they were like the drill instructors at that point.
Back to boot camp for you back here.
They treat you like boot camp that entire day, even though I was already 2 years in. I was a Lance Corporal. I wasn't some boot anymore.
And so you're willingly going into this how long have you been in at this point?
I was halfway through when I did this. I had 2 years under my belt, and I was, in my mind, a pretty badass Marine. You know, it wasn't like I was a boot and didn't know what I was doing. I was squared away, as you remember the term. And, but they had fun with you. You know, they had the most fun with me in the pool because they knew that, all right, this guy kicks butt and everything. He's a good swimmer, but he's not great. So, man, they're sharking you. They're pulling you down, and you've got your flak jacket on, and you have to pedal water. You have to hold bricks over your head while you're treading water, all that crazy stuff. So when it's all over, they bring you in and tell everybody, sorry, you didn't make it. Sorry, you made it. Or congratulations, you made it. And it comes to me, and they're like, oh, and you also have to do, you know, you're standing at attention, like when you're trying to get a promotion. Remember all these questions they'd ask? Who was the first commandant of the Marine Corps?
All that
stuff. And you had to answer that right. And, you know, they say, all right, leave for a minute. We'll let you know how you did. They bring me back, and they're like, yep, sorry, buddy. You suck. We don't want you. I'm like, wow. Because I thought, man, I did great. So then I walk out the barracks, and I'm all depressed. I'm like, those sons of a guns. I don't like Marine snipers anymore. And then they come running out. We're like, we're kidding, dude. Welcome to the club.
You know? So they punked you. You were the original punked right there.
Before we even knew what the term punk meant. They punked me. And then once you're in, then they wait for a billet to get in the sniper school, which is like the second most difficult thing.
You know? So you basically have to go through a selection before you can even think about attending the school.
Correct. Yeah. You got to get in with them first. And then even not everyone in state platoon becomes a sniper. Some don't graduate, but they're still there because they can be a spotter or something else. They're still quality Marines, but ultimately you want to have that badge, official scout sniper. I graduated the school that has a super high attrition rate.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. That's a real badge of honor there. Every Marine wants to be a sniper or recon, you know. So you actually lived the dream there.
I did. I want to say I got lucky. You know, I finished first with shooting in actual sniper school, and I never really hunted or did anything as a kid. Like, I think that's why. And I actually became an instructor later, and the female Marines did better than most male Marines because they never had a rifle. They never had Billy Bob, their uncle, tell them how to shoot a gun, and they had no bad habits. So they were raw, and they'd listen to every word you said, so they actually could shoot very well.
I've always heard that if you go in the Marine Corps without any instruction, you're going to end up being a better shooter, whether
Absolutely.
It's just it on the standard range or as a sniper.
I'm a lefty. They forced me to shoot right-handed because back then the M40A1 sniper rifle only had the bolt action for a right-handed one. They didn't have left-handed ones, so they forced me to shoot right-handed, which I think helped. You know, again, I won the shooting contest, 49 out of 50 targets, and got, you know, the shooter award. I think that's why, because I didn't have much experience shooting a rifle, and because I had to shoot right-handed. So I had to apply all those fundamentals they teach you. Bone support, muscle relaxation.
When you're relearning something, you don't have any ability to fall back on those bad habits.
Exactly.
Wow. That's such a cool story there. I dreamed of being a scout sniper at one point, and then I got in the Marine Corps, and I was like, that seems like way too much work. Oh, man.
The hardest part was actually stalking. It wasn't the shooting part. People were like, yeah, I don't know if I could shoot, you know, 1,000 yards or 800 yards. It's a moving target. Stalking, and we can talk about that if you want after the break, but that was the most – that's where you lose most of the people from sniper school.
Well, and I think we are going to have to talk about that a little bit after the break because we're getting ready to come up on our first break. Hey, for those of you who are listening, we've got Kevin Popko of Love Our Veterans. You're listening to Putting the Pieces Back Together.
Pieces Back Together. We'll be back with more of John Galina and Brad Borders after these messages from 105.9 100.7 WSIC. Now, back to Putting the Pieces Back Together with your hosts, John Galina and Brad Borders on 105.9 100.7 WSIC.
Well, we're back to Putting the Pieces Back Together with your fill-in host, the Devil Dog Devin, Brad and John. Well, they just didn't show up for work today. I don't know what to tell you. As usual, the Marines have just gotta go in first, and maybe we'll have them back next week. Speaking of Marines, we've got a great guest, Kevin Popko of Love Our Veterans. So, Kevin, You were just telling us about stalking right before the break. What's that all about?
That was the most challenging part of sniper school. You had to get through the stalking phase. You lost a lot of guys during qualification shooting, but stalking is where you make your money as a sniper.
So for those that are not in the know, what does stalking mean?
So ideally, you know, in real world situation, you picture a sniper from whatever movie you've seen. There's a ghillie suit involved.
Oh, yeah. And everybody knows the ghillie suit.
First of all, you had to make your own. They don't just hand them
to you. Wait, you make your own ghillie suit?
You have to. Yeah. You got to go to the hardware store, buy burlap for your knees and elbows and everything. You got to get the netting, do all. Yeah. And they inspect it to make sure it, you know, passes mustard and all that.
You have to like sew it up yourself and everything?
Oh, yeah. Everything. But you got taught to sew and iron in boot camp.
Absolutely.
So you would
have been fine doing that. That is true. For those of you who don't know, every Marine learns to sew and to iron their clothes. Ladies, if you're looking for a good husband, they already know how to do both those things.
And polish
just
shoes,
saying.
Obviously.
And polish shoes. Absolutely. I still polish shoes. Anyways, I'm sorry.
No, you're fine. So basically, ideally, they want you to get within 200, even though you're trained to take a shot at 1,000 yards. In most situations, you're not going to have that kind of clear range to do that. So you're trained, they want you to get within 200 yards of your target and be able to take a shot that no one knows where you are. It's out of nowhere, hence the term sniper. So they start you 2,000 yards out, and you've got a couple hours to get within 200 yards of two trainers sitting in the back of a Humvee with binoculars just trying to bust you.
Oh, wow.
Two of them just scanning the stalk field, we'll call it. Trying to nail your butt. There's also one that they call a walker. So, you know, you've got 2 hours. I think it was 2 hours. So the first half hour, you can run like, they can't see you. You're too far away. You can run through the brush, duck and weave, do all that. And then when you get within 1,000 yards, you kind of got to get down and crawl a little bit. The high crawl.
Oh, yeah, the good old high crawl.
And then once you start getting a little closer, you got to get to the low crawl, and they're just scanning, and guys get picked off right away. And they basically tell the walker, you know, they're on the radio, 10 steps forward, 10 steps to the right, sniper at your feet. And if you're anywhere within his arm radius, busted, you're done, get out of here.
No kidding.
Yeah, so you'd lose if you didn't get within, I want to say it was like 500 yards, you got 0 points.
So what if the walker sees you? Like, does he tell him or is...
Oh, no, he sees you. He's walking around. He could be right next to you, but he's not allowed to cheat. He can only do based on what this guy's searching, the guy scanning for you can tell him to do.
Right, so if they send him 100 yards in the other direction, he's just...
Yeah,
just going to stand
good.
Where they told him.
Right. Exactly.
Oh, okay, cool.
So
cool.
You don't have to worry about the walker. You just have to worry about the two trying to, you know, find you.
See.
So once you start getting closer, you know, they call it turkey necking.
So many guys
get busted turkey necking. They'll peek their head up above the brush and bam, oh, there he is, you son of a gun. That was so easy. Get the walker over. You're done. So there's parameters. You know, got to get 10 points to get a perfect score in the stalking phase. And the only way to get 10 points is to get within the 200 yards undetected. And then take two shots. They're blanks, obviously, but it still has the blowback out of the rifle. It shoots about 6 feet. They call it toss salad. Any vegetation and mulch and leaves in front of your rifle, when you take that shot, it sprays and upsets the vegetation, and those guys are looking for that. So maybe they don't see you first shot. Got their binos, but they hear where it came from. Now they're zoomed in, and you got to take your second shot. And the only way to confirm that you can't just lay there with your eyes closed and take a shot and say, yep, I got them. They hold up index cards. You know, we got your sniper scope, index cards that say A, B, C, D, you know, a number,
so
a
you have
symbol.
To be able to tell them what it says on there.
Correct. Otherwise, they'd be like, you didn't shoot me. You were laying there on your back with your eyes closed. So that's how they justify it. If you can get two shots off, they don't see you. The last thing they do is check the windage, you know, on your rifle to make sure that you had it within 200 yards, that you would have been able to make that shot and get that dude center mass. You do all that, you get a 10, which is the perfect score. You have to get two 10s. There's 10 stalks in sniper school.
Okay.
You've got to get a perfect 10 twice. And you have to get like 80 total. So maybe you got busted halfway through and only got 3 points. Maybe you got the first shot off, but not the second one, and they busted you. You get like 7 points. So ultimately, you have to get like 80 points and two perfect scores. That's why so many more people drop during the stalking phase than the actual, you know, range qualification.
That makes so
it's
much
so
sense.
Hard.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Marines aren't necessarily known for their patience. So
it was brutal though. Like you'd be 4 hours, you'd be in a hot stalking zone. You'd be chugging water. And literally you're going through mud and swamps. You would have to just, you know, pee your pants. Now you can stand up and take a leak. So it was crazy. You were just a mess afterwards.
That's I had a buddy of mine that went through scout sniper training and he says, hey, if you ever meet a scout sniper, you just ask them how they like taking a poop in their pants.
I never did that, stalking at least. Maybe some other time, but not during the stalks.
Well, I'm glad that you didn't have to go there. But speaking of where we're going to go, we're going to go to a guest on the line next to talk a little bit about how you and your organization, Love Our Veterans, is partnering with Purple Heart Homes.
Great, yeah.
Do we have Lamar Austin on the line?
I am here.
Hey, Lamar, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you today?
Oh, I am just excellent. I switched up our shared office for a new radio studio here.
Excellent.
Yeah. So, Lamar, my understanding is you've been working with Kevin here and Dave Glasscock from Love Our Veterans on a project. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, yes, we met in trying to help this veteran, and I met Dave, and at first we were trying to help get some home repairs done for him, and my first visit to the house, my assessment was that we're not going to put any money into that house.
Why wouldn't you put any money in there?
It's very poor condition. It should probably be condemned. And I didn't see where it was worth putting any money. It'd be like putting a Band-Aid on an open wound that's 6 inches long. It just wasn't going to work. But in continuing to talk to the veteran and to Dave, we decided we would attempt to do some repairs because of his financial situation. He's on fixed income. There was just nothing. He had no options. So we decided to try to get some stuff done.
Right.
But then after a little bit of exploration with a roofing company and general contractor, they determined, if we tried to replace his roof, the house would probably collapse in the process.
Wait, did you say that if you took the roof off, his house was going to collapse?
That's what the general contractor told us.
Holy smokes. I mean, that's not the condition we want our veterans living in, for sure. So what did you do? I mean, obviously, y'all are still working on the projects. What's going on there?
Well, we decided to have a little meeting here and pull in some of our resources from here. Matt Stevenson, our program services director, and Paul Cockerham, our chief development officer. And we had a little brainstorming session. And I was the scribe for that because I had no storm activity in my brain. So I was the scribe. But we decided to try and start reaching out to see how much help and how many partners we could get if we attempted to do something crazy like build a new house.
And so this is Donald Surratt that we're talking about, by the way, right? Is that correct?
That is correct.
And how many partners have we ended up with on that project so far, Lamar?
We're in the neighborhood of 25. And we still have a couple of openings for some stuff that we're short of. And it's been a wonderful experience. Our general contractor is donating his time. Just about everybody involved is either donating or heavily discounting the items that they're supplying for this project.
Well, that's awesome. And so just so y'all know, we don't typically build homes at Purple Heart Homes. This is a special situation where the community has just come together due to the relationship of Love Our Veterans and Lamar's just beating the bushes along with with Joel Dalton out there, also part of the PHH team. And we just greatly appreciate all y'all are doing. And so this is a big event coming up this weekend or this upcoming week. What's happening there, Lamar?
Well, you typically probably don't have an event around a house being torn down, but we decided with all the participation in the community and all that we're wanting to do, we thought we would have a little demolition event on Tuesday when we start to tear the old house down. And it was built by Donald's father, by the way. So he has earned the right to take the first swing at the house.
Man, that's awesome, Lamar. We're getting ready to go to break. Thank you so much for calling in and sharing that story. Hey, if you want to be part of this Donald Surratt project where so many of the community members have already come together, go to phhusa.org. You can be part of this project or so many like it. There's so many veterans out there that need your support. You've been listening to Putting the Pieces Back Together. We'll be right back.
There's more Putting the Pieces Back Together with John Galina and Brad Borders on the way from 105.9 100.7 WSIC. Putting the Pieces Back Together continues now. Here are your hosts, John Galina and Brad Borders on 105.9 100.7 WSIC.
Welcome back to Putting the Pieces Back Together. Presented by Purple Heart Homes. We're a 501c3 dedicated to bringing peace of mind to veterans by addressing their housing needs through critical home repair. And we're also talking with another veterans organization, Love Our Veterans, out of Denver, North Carolina. Is that right?
We're incorporated in Denver. The actual store location that hopefully we can talk about in a few is on the right on the line. So they call it Denver / Maiden area. Not truly
yes.
Maiden. It's not really Denver. It's one of those right there at the border of Lincoln and Catawba County.
And if you're listening to us somewhere other than North Carolina on the regular radio, Denver is also a city in good old North Kakalaki. It's not just a big city down there in Texas.
Colorado, not Texas.
Colorado. I'm not very bright. I'm a Marine, you know.
There's probably a Denver, Texas, too, but the big one is Colorado.
Actually, my wife was telling me there was like five Clevelands the other day.
We have a Dallas right down the road from us, too.
That's
Dallas,
right. We do have a Dallas. Yeah. By the way, for those of you who are just joining us, we are talking to Kevin Popko of Love Our Veterans, and we've talked a little bit about you going to Scout Sniper School and how stalking was the hardest part. And so how long were you in the Marine Corps?
I did the four-year enlistment, then I extended to go to Okinawa, so it ended up being about 4.5 years.
Oh, wow.
And that time to be in, I don't know, 18 different countries and all the places I've seen is amazing looking back on it, that you could go that many places in 4 years. You're stationed at Lejeune, but you're never there. You know, you're always deploying. You're always doing this cold weather training, the Somalia thing. I was between the two Gulf Wars. So mm-hmm. The action that I saw was, for those that remember, was a Somalia, the Black Hawk down thing, all that.
Oh, yeah.
That's where we saw our action. But they sent us to train the Kuwaitis. I've been to a lot of those Arab places. Obviously, like just said, Okinawa. So I've been to Japan, spent time in Cuba, babysitting the Haitian refugees, just crazy. Norway for NATO, cold weather training. So it's crazy to think, you know, I'm sure you're the same way. When you're in the Corps, you're always miserable. It's always, you're too hot, you're getting yelled at. You know, uh-huh. I was in Somalia and all the Gulf areas, it's 120 degrees, you're miserable, you're drinking 80 degree water because they don't have refrigerated trucks. Next thing you know, you're in Alaska or Norway and you're freezing, again, miserable, and you just hate it the whole time. And then you get to be our age and you look back on your service, you're like, wow. And you think about the things you did and you're so fond
Absolutely.
Of those memories.
Oh, man. I always like to describe it as the best and the worst time of my life.
That's true. Yep.
Simultaneously
Spot
on. Yep. Going on. And it's funny you mentioned going to Cuba and Kuwait and We were a few years apart, and yep. I still kind of went to the same places. And
it was crazy. I was lucky. We were in Cuba, and just a couple weeks in is when I got called that my scout sniper school billet came up. So, hey,
wow.
Remember I told you I made Stapleton, but I wasn't a sniper yet. I had to go to sniper school. They called me up, so I got to leave Cuba. I leave all the guys behind because it was miserable there, too, the banana rats and all the nonsense. It was boring. And I got there like 4 days early for sniper school, and my corporal buddy, I was a Lance Corporal at the time, I think, gave me the keys because he lived off base at Topsail Island.
Oh,
I had his condo for like 4 days with nobody to report to. So I hung out on the beach all day. And then when I got to sniper school, they made up for it. Like, all right.
You know, immediately just hammered you down. Yeah.
That was a nice treat to leave those guys in Cuba and be at the beach in North Carolina.
In all fairness, the waters in Cuba are much nicer than they are at Topsail.
That's true. Unfortunately, we were just watching their refugee camp, so I didn't spend much time at in the water.
Okinawa is
the same way. The beaches in Okinawa are awesome, even though
really?
The towns there I wasn't fond of.
I did not get an opportunity to go to Okinawa. I think I was getting ready to get orders. And then the old 9/11 happened. And so, so we completely changed direction and, you know, I went a few different places. Actually, I think the first place I went was Cuba from there because we had to build those wonderful prisons down. And it was interesting times. So you were in for about 4.5 years and then you got out.
I got out. Yeah, the intent was federal law enforcement. You know, well, I went back and got my degree in criminology/criminal justice, at University of Maryland. Like I said earlier, go Terps. And Marine Scout Sniper. Criminology degree, federal law enforcement, made sense.
Yeah.
So, you know, I applied to every three-letter acronym you can think of, ATF, DEA, FBI, and lo and behold, the FBI wanted attorneys, accountants, white-collar, like, forensic crime folks.
Guys
like me were a dime a dozen.
They don't want guys with, like, the skills to take you out.
I mean, they have their hostage rescue team and guys, but
sure.
Just like sniper school, there's a million guys that want to do that, and they're only going to take a few. And I'm just, you know, this guy off the street, fresh out of the Marines, they didn't need guys like me at that time. So, you know, while I'm waiting for interviews with the Capitol Police and Secret Service and all this, a really good friend of mine who was a great salesman got his job in commercial real estate, made a boatload of money, senior broker all of a sudden.
Wow.
I want to bring you on as a junior broker. I'm like, nah, I'm looking at federal law enforcement. He's like, Capitol Police, really? You're going to make $25,000 a year and you're going to be sitting in a guard shack every Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's. It's going to be miserable. So he's like, come on with me. Well, he talks me into it. Again, good salesperson. And fast forward a year and the market crashes in D.C.
Oh, no.
But I did become a good salesperson. So from that day forward, I ended up being a regional sales manager with various manufacturers, you know, three or four. You know, I was always with one for 5-6 years, moved on to another, got promoted, made good money, good career, good life. And then eventually got laid off 2 years ago. And was interviewing, and you're going to do so many interviews. So
right,
I started
absolutely.
Volunteering at Christian Ministries, which is a local nonprofit like us and Purple Heart Homes, doing the great thing for the community, and I loved it. And my mom and wife on separate occasions says, you love what you're doing so much. Why don't you start your own thing for veterans?
Right.
Light bulb comes off. I had spent 150 nights in a Marriott hotel the year prior to getting laid off. I'm like, that's... Think about it. Do the math. 150 nights in a hotel versus waking up with my wife and kids. Yeah, you know, maybe it's time to not do that lifestyle anymore.
Right, yeah, that doesn't sound too appealing. And I bet it's probably not very appealing for your family as well.
It wears down on you. Yeah. You know, at one point I had 14 states, and one night I'm Dallas, the next night I'm in Atlanta.
That sounds worse than being in the Marine Corps.
Yeah, well, the money was there. I was taking care of the family and kids, but I unfortunately missed a lot of events. So, the light bulb went off, and I said, you know what? You guys are onto something. So my wife and I looked into it and co-founded Love Our Veterans, Inc., which is the 501c3 nonprofit corporation, just like Purple Heart Homes. And Love Our Veterans Thrift Store was born shortly thereafter as the conduit in which to provide the funding to help local veterans, which is our mission.
Right, because one of the hardest parts about starting any nonprofit is getting your funding. I mean, I can tell you that's a challenge at Purple Heart Homes every day. I mean, there's always one more veteran that we want to help, yep. but we can't help all of them. Yep. So, you know, we could help more if we had more funding. By the way, if you want to contribute to Purple Heart Homes, you can go to phhusa.org and help out a veteran today. I'm sure that with Love Our Veterans, is there a way for folks to contribute to y'all as well?
Yeah, we don't have the website set up quite the way you guys do yet. We're still learning as we go. It's been under 2 years. Right now, the best way to help us, we'll obviously always accept, you know, cash donations, or they can send it to us. I can leave some information. But the best way and what we've experienced is it's all about Jenny and I and our board, we're the facilitators. We're not the ones doing this. We've got our donators, our shoppers, and our volunteers, what really makes everything happen. So if they come by, I know locally at least, if they came by our store and shopped, donated, offered to volunteer, that's what helps most. Our goal was one veteran a month. We're in month 20 in our existence. I think we're on number 26, not counting Donald twice. I'm sure we'll talk about Donald a little bit more here in a minute, but he was, I think, number 3 on our list, and now we're going back to Donald with your help here.
We're going to put a pin in it right there. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about Love Our Veterans and the Donald Surratt Project. You've been listening to Putting the Pieces Back Together.
Keep it right here. Putting the Pieces Back Together with John Galena and Brad Borders will return after these messages on 105.9 100.7 WSIC. Now, more Putting the Pieces Back Together with John Galena and Brad Borders on 105.9 100.7 WSIC.
We're back. You're listening to Putting the Pieces Back Together, and I am Devil Dog Devin. And there's a lot of firsts today here on the show. First time I'm hosting the show by myself, and first time we are in the brand new studio here. Joe's doing something crazy with his desk. It's like elevating. He's got magic going on in there. I think there's some witchcraft or something. I don't know. But it's very distracting. And so, So I don't get too distracted. We're just going to get right back into our guest. If you're just now joining us, we're talking to our Kevin Popko. Man, I'm all over the place, Kevin. You're going to have to come in.
I'm Devil Dog Kevin. You're Devil Dog Devin.
Oh wow, Devil Dog Kevin. Man, I might have to have you call in here now. So Kevin Popko is with Love Our Vets, a nonprofit in the Denver, North Carolina area. And you were just telling us a little bit about your thrift store and your mission.
Yeah, so after incorporating Love Our Veterans, Inc., we said, well, the way we're going to generate funding is copy the Christian Ministry or Goodwill or Habitat Restore model, mm-hmm. which is to have, you know, operate a thrift store where everything's donated. We don't have any overhead other than the landlord and stuff. We're not like buying and selling. We're just getting it free. Selling it to the public, making them happy, and then providing the funding to help local veterans. So it's we actually added on. We've got 6,000 square feet now of showroom space, another 2,000 square feet in the back warehouse where we receive the donations. Because obviously we've got to clean it. If it's electric, electronic, we've got to test it. We've got to price it. So all encompassing, it's an old Lowe's grocery store warehouse.
Wow.
So it's pretty cool. It's kind of broken up and old, but everyone loves it because it's 3 different stores in one. So they kind of come in the main store and you see 2,000 square feet of home decor, artwork, plates, glasses, that kind of thing.
Right.
And it's like for first timers, it's always fun. It's like, oh no, keep going straight. And you're in the warehouse store. Big furniture, gym equipment. That's where we have all of our records, CDs, DVDs. You name it. And then if you take a hard right into the other store, it's our holiday store. So we put a lot of Christmas stuff out when it's time. But it kind of converted in just another main store. So you can find, okay, that's where we put the clothing as well. We've probably got like 10 clothes racks, all nice clothes. My wife's particular about it. If it comes in and there's a stain, a tear, it's out of there. It's not going to be hung up. We don't have 50 racks where we can just throw up everything.
Right.
We don't want to do the bin thing with people rifling through and not knowing what size. So it's very neat and organized. She does a great job. So And we're smart because even though you don't make a lot of money on clothes,
no,
but you got to go pretty far to get to them. So it's kind of like the grocery store with milk. It's like you're going to pass some other cool, really cool stuff you're going to buy before you get to the clothes there around the corner.
I'm not sure you're supposed to be letting those trade secrets out here on the radio.
We didn't even plan it that way. We never thought to ourselves, let's make it like milk at the grocery store. It's kind of just where we had room to put the racks. And then in hindsight, it's like, wow, that was smart. So it's great. I mean, we were talking earlier about my hotel travel, waking up in the, you know, in a strange bed every morning, or most mornings or half the mornings, whatever. Now I'm so blessed because not only do we get a chance to help veterans that are less fortunate than myself as a veteran, but I literally have a 7-mile commute from my house to the store.
Wow.
And I have my own personal urinal in the back warehouse room because it was an old Lowe's grocery store. And all that stuff's still there. I'm like, wow, this is cool. Wow. I've always wanted a urinal.
Oh, what a difference there. I don't think that I've ever had the dream of having my own urinal, but I am glad that you were able to accomplish
if
that.
If you had a man cave, you'd think about it.
You know, I probably would. If I had a man cave, my wife would probably think about it because something that she hates, and I'm so sorry, Amber, is that in boot camp, I don't know if you got this story, but I was taught that all the toilet seats were supposed to stand at the position of attention.
Yeah, that way we don't have to clean it. You know,
that's true.
It's always up. You don't ever have to worry about cleaning the seat.
Oh my gosh! Yeah. But so you've got a great retail space there, about 6,000 square feet, you use all the proceeds from what you make there to go and out in the community and assist veterans.
Correct. Yeah, 100% of the profit. So we do have operating expenses. We got to pay the landlord, you know, Duke Energy, the trash dumpster guy, Spectrum for the internet, et cetera. But after that, 100% of the store revenue profit goes to help local veterans. And 100% of any cash donations we get, which we do get, you know, and again, we're going to, you know, hopefully hit up some bigger corporations now that we have a track record. We've been around for, once we hit that 2-year mark, it'd be time to reach out to somebody like Lowe's Home Improvement. Imagine how many veterans work there. They love helping vets. They've already helped us. They let us pick out stuff from the store that we use for our shop, light bulbs, batteries, cleaning supplies.
And I believe they're actually a grant partner on the Donald Surratt project that we're partnering with you on.
Yeah, Lowe's or Home Depot, they're both great. I kind of get them mixed up with who's doing what. They both support veterans. Bank of America, we're going to go after at some point, same way. I'm sure they're going to want to support veterans. NASCAR, you know, any of these Charlotte corporations.
So what he's saying is if you're out there and you're a big corporation, you got some money the Denver area, he'll take it. But speaking of the Donald Surratt project and all those partners, which includes Lowe's, how did that all come about? I mean, how did we get so many?
You know, it started, we met Donald. He was probably our third veteran that we helped. And I want to say he was referred from the Veteran Services Organization, Joey Briggs out of Lincoln County. And, you know, we met him. Dave Glasscock that Lamar's working with on Demo Day and all the things that we're doing now with you guys. Dave and I met him. We saw his house and he was in bad shape. He lost his mom and his son within a couple of years of each other.
Right.
When they were both around, the three of them lived together. And as you mentioned earlier, Donald's childhood home. He's lived there since he's 5. His father built it way back when. Donald's in his 70s now, so do the math. And then we realized when he lost his mom and his son, he wasn't getting their income anymore. He was able to support them off his disability, his Social Security, whatever he's got.
Right, because he's in his 70s.
Correct.
And he's taking care of 2 other disabled people.
Correct. And when they moved on, mm-hmm. passed, he lost that, but he still had debt. He still had to pay the mortgage, the
Absolutely.
Car, and all the things they all had together.
Right.
So he couldn't pull that off anymore alone.
And he hadn't had the opportunity to really work for a while because he was taking Correct. Care of 2 people that couldn't work themselves.
Correct. So once Love Our Veterans, we were brand new at the time. We had some funding built up. So we did our big reveal with Donald that we're obviously hopefully going to be doing here soon with you guys. Our big reveal at the time was to pay off his mortgage. his car payment and his son. He still owed $5,000 for his recently buried son's funeral expense.
Oh my gosh.
We took care of all three of those. We did it at this party. He had no idea we were doing it. It's Dave's got it on Facebook somewhere. We can link it with you guys. But if you met Donald, and I'm sure you will at some point, oh my God. When we had to move him out of the house for you guys to do the demo, my mom likes him so much, she said, he can move in with me.
Oh, he's, but by the way, this guy is, he's just so charismatic and kind. And, you know, when they start talking to him about rebuilding him a new home, he was asking if both his front and his back door would have a light on it. He has these super humble requests where a lot of times, you know, you're helping people and sometimes they've got some big dreams and like, oh, granite countertops and Whirlpool.
To have a toilet that flushes, that works properly is a big deal for him. He has to go to his neighbor's house with empty milk gallon jugs to fill them up, to pour into the toilet in order for it to flush. He has like three working lamps.
Man.
Yeah, I mean, it's bad. I mean, it sucks that it took this long for someone, you know, for someone like us to help him, but no one knew. And now that we know, we're doing something about
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we certainly are just so honored that you invited us in to be part of this and partner with you on this project. I mean, I've met Donald and he is just a great human being. And
on the earth.
Yeah, he spent his past, I don't know how many years, just taking care of other people. Okay. You know, he served his country and then he just continued to serve other folks. So we just have a little bit of time left.
Yep.
Folks coming straight fresh out of the military, is there anything, a little bit of advice that you would give them?
Fresh out. I mean, transitioning to civilian life.
Yeah, transition to civilian life.
Those guys at VSO for us here locally, I don't know how it works with other, you know, states and jurisdictions. I know that I was shocked at what the folks do. And, you know, Joey in Lincoln County, you're talking about the guy in Iredell. His name escapes me right now. There's got to be that everywhere. Because the VA, yes, but that's federal. You're going to end up there. They're going to help you. But a lot of people have their complaints and are concerned. There's always a local government, state or local government agency like Veterans Services Organization of North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great starting point. You go in and see for someone like Joey in their respective district, they're going to talk to you through what you have to do to get disability with the VA, what hospital to go to for help, this and that. That I know very well. As far as transitioning to a civilian career, the military gives you that packet. It's great. They help you write resumes. I mean, just take advantage of what they leave you when you exit the military.
Well,
you remember that packet, right? I ignored it. I'm like,
I got it. I ignored it. But hey, Kevin, that's all the time we've got. You've been a great guest, and we're going to have you call in as Devil Dog Kevin sometime soon. You've been listening to Putting the Pieces Back Together, and we'll see you again next week.
Thanks,
have a good one. Thank you.
You've been listening to Putting the Pieces Back Together, brought to you by Purple Heart Homes. Please consider making a donation to this worthwhile cause dedicated to improving the lives of veterans one home at a time by visiting purplehearthomesusa.org. Join us again next Thursday at 3 p.m. for Putting the Pieces Back Together on WSIC News Talk Now.
Serving you better than ever before. 105.9 100.7 WSIC, Statesville, Morrisville, North Charlotte.